Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Just Press Start here at justpressstart.net. I am pleased to have with me today Sebastian Carlson from Numenon Games, the makers of Nimbus for the PC, and also soon to be released on PSN. So, hello, Sebastian. Why don't you introduce yourself quickly and tell us a little bit about yourself and about the game?
Yeah, sure. Basically, Numenon Games, I think that the roots to the company began probably about 3 years ago, I think. Me and my partner, Felix, we studied in the same school, which was a school called SOF, which was the School of Future Entertainment. Basically, it's a school for game development-related programs. So, basically, my partner is an artist, and I'm a programmer, basically. And I also have a lot of business stuff. So, anyway, from there, we went to the same company after school, which was a company called Tarsier Studios. They're fairly unknown, I'd say, but they made a game for PlayStation Network, which was called Ragdoll Kung Fu. So we were part of that development team there. And basically that was great and all, but we kind of felt that we wanted to have a shot at going at it alone, on our own. So I believe in the beginning of 2009, we actually quit Tarsier and founded Numenon Games. Although we haven't been working on Nimbus for 2 years, the first year was kind of like some a lot of contract work and basically getting the tech going, all of the programming stuff. We also worked on a different project during the beginning, but basically in the end of 2009, I believe we started doing Nimbus, which was based on a prototype which Felix has made in Game Maker a lot of years earlier. Basically we released Nimbus in October, the last year. And now, since the beginning of this year, we have been exploring getting the game onto PlayStation Network. That's basically where we are at right now.
That's excellent. I mean, and for people who have not played Nimbus yet, and first of all, what are you waiting for? It's fantastic. I'll be doing a full review in the near future. So tell us a little bit about, tell people a little bit about what to expect from Nimbus, if, like I said, if they haven't tried it, even though they really should have by now.
Yeah, well, basically we're trying for a good while, trying to categorize it, but I think it's kind of like a racing slash platform game in some ways. I think it's pretty close to old in style and the pure focus on gameplay to bit older games from, like the Super Nintendo era of sorts. So basically, the core gameplay is that you control a little craft which has no engine, so it's always falling. And you have to use the gravity and the momentum from falling to kind of make your way around the level. And then we time every attempt, so there's online high scores and that sort of stuff. So it's, and of course the puzzle element, there's a lot of puzzling on lots of the levels. So, that's probably what to expect. Puzzle slash platform slash racing, I'd say.
So, how did you decide on that concept, and how did you decide on using the little spaceship now, from the opening cutscene, it kind of looks like little spaceship is trying to rescue his little spaceship girlfriend from a larger spaceship. Do I have that correct? It was.
yeah, that's correct. It's kind of like a nod at, like Super Mario, etc.
We were saying, how did you guys come up with the concept for the game? So tell me about the original origins.
Yeah, basically, Felix created the core gameplay for it, like, I don't know, I think it was 5 years ago or something, in a Game Maker prototype. And he wasn't, if I recall this correctly, he wasn't even trying to make a game very close to Nimbus. He was, like, playing around with making a shoot-em-up kind of game, which had the basic mechanics for the whole falling and the gravity part. And then he kind of felt like was really hard to aim when you in a shoot 'em up where you're always falling like in Nimbus, so you kind of ditched the whole shooting part and then it kind of evolved into the game it is today from that. The prototype didn't have the world map and an online high scores, but otherwise the prototype is actually fairly close to what Nimbus is today. So yeah, that's basically the ground to.
So we were talking to Dan Dixon the other day from Universe Sandbox. I don't know if you're familiar. It's a gravity simulation that handles where planets go if another planet is to collide, anything like that. So, and he was talking about, you know, the calculations and everything involved in incorporating gravity into just something like that. So how difficult was that to have an accurate modeling of gravity for the game and then still keep it as white-knuckled as it can get sometimes, especially going through some of those little tiny corridors? Thank you so much for those. Oh, wait, what?
Yeah, Nimbus uses middleware from NVIDIA called Physics. And they basically handle all the physics simulations. So that's been really great for us to actually, since the math behind making a physics engine is really hard.
Right.
We have that whole thing. Yeah, NVIDIA does that for us, we could say, through physics. Physics is really for 3D physics, but we are limited to two-dimensional physics in Nimbus. But so that hasn't been really too much of a problem, really, the whole simulation part.
Okay, so then explain or discuss how, again, especially for a game like this, a racing slash puzzler, you know, platformer, the controls have to be so exacting, and I mean they really are, especially with the Xbox controller. I mean, it just plays very, very smoothly. So, how much work was involved in that, or was that actually kind of easy to do once you knew what you wanted to do?
Actually, the controller part has been, probably the largest problem of the whole game. And I'm happy to hear you like it, because there's a lot of people out there who have had a lot of problems with the controls. Because as the controls are really from the perspective of the craft, so if you like, want to turn right, that turns the clockwise.
Right.
So it becomes inverted if the craft is pointing upwards. Downwards, if you're pointing downwards, pushing right, actually turns the craft to the left, to go to the left. So, it's kind of like Asteroids, the old game. But, we have had a lot of problems with that. So, we are going to explore new control schemes for the PlayStation Network version of the game, but we'll see how it goes, because it's hard to get the same feeling if you change the controls. But it's certainly something we have spent a lot of time on.
It was a little difficult getting used to, and the only time I still have some problem, and these come up quite a bit, but I'm getting used to it, is anytime you hit one of the fields that are the ground things that make you bounce back up. Yeah, figuring out the angle and making sure to be turning the right way after I collide and start heading back. So that takes a little bit of mental flipping, but.
Yeah, certainly. And that is actually, as you say, that is precisely the entity most people have had problems with. And there's actually a trick to that, which idle hint I would like to say, is to don't try to go into the inverter and controlling it directly afterwards. Instead, trying to position the craft so that you kind of like release the controller and let it bounce and then start to control again.
That's what actually worked for me. I did try that. I remembered my physics from back in the day that you'll come off at the same angle that you impact. And I said, wait a second, and then I can take over from there. And that did make all the difference.
Yeah, it really does. And that is kind of hard to tell the player, you know, like, you should probably have some kind of tutorial of some sort, but we didn't really have time to do any of those. So it's good that you tried that, because that really makes it a lot easier.
Right. Oh, definitely. Now, back to the actual game design itself. How did you decide on, well, when you knew you were going to be doing spaceships, how did you decide on what the art style would be like, and how the level design would work? So I know Felix would answer more of the questions about the art, but maybe you can give me a background as to how he came up with some of the designs. I see a little bit, it looks to me a little bit like it was influenced by Sonic. It's got that feel to it to me.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. actually, we submit the game, I believe, at the end of 2009. We submit the game to Independent Games Festival. And at that point, we have worked with the game for like less than a month, I'd say. And the game looked really different from what it does now. It kind of looked, I don't know, it didn't really have an art style at all, I'd say. So actually, it took a lot of months. I think it took like 4 or 5 months before Felix really found an art style which he thought was worked for the game. And I actually believe it is a bit inspired by Sonic. And it looked more like Sonic in the beginning. But we have tried to, I don't know, kind of deviate from the whole Sonic look. And probably we'll try to deviate a bit more for the PlayStation Network release, because we are working a lot of the artwork and art style. But the thing is, I think the thing that brings people to believe look like Sonic is kind of like the color scheme for the blocks.
Exactly, yes.
Blocks and blocks. And I think in Sonic it's kind of like rectangles,
right.
Squares. But to make it look a bit different, it's actually bacon stripes. People won't see it, but it's trying to be kind of like bacon stripes.
Okay. Well, I said it looks less that, you know, it looks more like an homage to it than, you know. So, I mean, you can tell that there's an influence there, but it's definitely a style all of your own. But again, yeah. Talk to me a little bit about about coming up with the different level designs. Okay, now you have a ship that's going to fall. Now, yeah. How do you incorporate the puzzles that you've worked in? And there is a degree of exploration involved, too, because, I mean, you've got the coins to be looking for that might be on a completely different path than where you were headed. One of the early levels, I can't remember the world number, but that one where you use the momentum from getting the key to work your way all the way back to the other end of the map to get that coin. I thought that was brilliant because it has that, like I said, that exploration aspect of it too, plus working in the puzzles. So, you know, talk to me a little bit about how you developed that.
Yeah, it was very organic. When Felix made the prototype, there was a certain feel to a lot of levels, which we tried to port over to the finished game, to the PC version. And some puzzles work better than others, but I think since we've had so much time from the level design, since the prototype is so old, we really had the time to think about different puzzles. So I think one feedback we've gotten from the game is that it's kind of varied. Level design is very varied.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that is a lot due to the fact that we had a lot of time thinking about the core game mechanics, even if we didn't really have a lot of time to polish on the levels in the end, since we kind of ran out of time with that. And then we had a lot of people from the outside come in and design levels and try new stuff. So, and then there's always a flow of new ideas going around, and then we try to polish those and turn them into full levels.
So how difficult is that to work in? I mean, you're working in all these different designs from all these different people, but also keep a level progression kind of thing where you're gradually taking the player through all these new twists and turns and new elements all throughout the game, but not just throw them all at them at once. So how does that work? Starting it, let's make it kind of easy at the beginning and gradually work our way to more fiendishly difficult as the game goes on.
Yeah, that's been a really, really large problem. It's very difficult to get that feeling where it's kind of like player starts out kind of sucking, and then we try to step up the difficulty in the same pace that people get better. But the large problem is that people get better at very different rates. And the one thing we are trying to do now when we are adding more levels to the game for PlayStation Network version is to have, like, for example, some players like the puzzle elements. There are some levels which are very heavy on the puzzling part, and some levels which are heavy on the kind of like skill controlling the craft, skill part, I say. And,
right.
We're trying to get more alternative routes into the game, so like people can like the puzzling part, always have an alternative for a level which is puzzling. And actually, we didn't think a lot about the difficulty progression in the beginning, so we like had a ton of levels, and then we kind of like tried to classify them on how hard they were, and at the same time, make sure that we don't have levels in the beginning with a lot of different entities, kind of introducing them. And then we revised the world map a lot of times to actually kind of get that kind of the progression going. But I know one problem we have is World 3. I don't know how far you've gotten in the game yet, but World 3 gets really, there's a spike in difficulty in World 3. We're probably going to try making World 3 a bit easier towards the middle of it. We've got a lot of people get stuck in World 3.
What advice do you have for those people right now before, well, first of all, are the changes that you're making for the PSN version, are they going to find their way back to the PC version?
Yeah, we're hoping that a lot of them can get back to the PC version. I don't want to say anything definite because...
Right, of course.
The idea is to get where it makes sense and where it isn't too much of a job for us to kind of like get a lot of the features from the PlayStation Network version back to the PC version. But for the PlayStation Network version, we are reworking a lot of the code base for the PlayStation Network version, so it will probably be a while
before
we get back to the PC. But the idea is to get a lot of stuff back to the PC community. People have bought the game on PC. We are very... we really want to give back to those who bought it on PC. Exist.
Right, exactly. So again, what advice do you have for those people with World 3 right now? Do you have any tips or something that might make the going a little bit more easy for them?
Yeah, I don't know really. one thing I do want to say is don't play the game on hard unless you really want that kind of challenge, because then you get zero lives per checkpoint. And I would probably say play it on easy. And the game saves the progress. If you go from hard down to medium, then you can continue where you left off on hard. So don't be afraid to go down. That's probably what I say. Play the game on easy on first playthrough, at least.
Excellent. I can definitely see that. So tell me about some of the puzzles. Some of the levels definitely seem large enough to have that checkpoint system. So I think that was a nice feature. So tell me, is that something that's difficult to add in, or how did you decide where they should go, how they should go? Because I've never gotten to ask anyone how they've worked out where things will save or how checkpoints work out. So.
Yeah, basically, in the beginning, we didn't have any checkpoints. So when we submit the game to IGF, Independent Games Festival, the first time,
right,
we got feedback that it was way too hard, and it really was, but you don't see that when you play the game every day, pretty much.
Of course.
It's very easy for us, of course. So we kind of like felt, okay, we need some kind of way to have different difficulty levels, otherwise the game will be for super hardcore people or for very partial people. So, I think checkpoint was the easiest way to go at it, because another way would be to have the levels kind of like change somewhat depending on difficulty.
Right.
That is a lot of work for the level designer to kind of incorporate that into every level. So, and when placing the checkpoints, there wasn't as many checkpoints in the beginning. So. It certainly has been kind of like an iteration process where we've added more and more and more. And some levels kind of doesn't make sense to have checkpoints at all. Because I know for a fact that there's a few levels where you can save time by dying and respawning in a new checkpoint. If that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know, but it certainly affects how the level is played.
Well, that's what I was going to say, too. It's... Unlike some checkpoints where you just have to go through a spot, I mean, you sort of have to earn these checkpoints because you have to still guide your ship to it. So I thought that was kind of an intriguing way of going about it.
Yeah. It's really hard. We had some levels before where the level would kind of go through the level and take a key or something, and the previous part of the level will lock down. But, of course, if you have a checkpoint in the locked part of the level, then you can just die and go to that area anyways. So there's certainly some instances where it's very hard to get the checkpoints in the correct spots.
Mm-hmm. So let's switch gears for a minute. Tell me about incorporating music and sound design into a title like this. Tell me a little bit about where you got your how all that was done.
Yeah, actually, that is an area which we both here at the office. It was very important, but for some reason we left it to the drill to the last minute. Sadly, it's pretty easy to neglect the sound and music part because it's not needed during development.
Right.
Like see the progress. So I think it was the last month we kind of like, oh, we need some music here. So by pure luck, I'd say we have a very close friend who helped us out on that, and he worked really fast. So I think he made like almost all of the music in like 1 or 2 weeks.
Wow!
As well as the sound effects, we're very happy with how that turned out, and we've gotten a lot of positive feedback on the soundtrack.
Oh, absolutely! If I hadn't known that just then, it was all done in about a week. That's incredible. But how did you give him input into what kind of music you wanted or sound effects that you wanted, or how did they decide for this whimsical kind of world what sounds would work and what music would or would not work?
Yeah, we gave him a lot of free room to do what he wanted, but we certainly had gave him a lot of feedback on the stuff he produced, and we already knew kind of like music we do since that is the game, the sound in the game is kind of like his style, I'd say. we use a tool called VWise, which is another middleware which we use, which really gives the sound designer a lot of freedom in how we create the music. And for example, there's a sound connected to the craft when you're flying, and that sound is controlled by how fast the craft pitches the sound. So he really used those kind of things a lot. In the same way, when you go into the bumpers, that sound is pitched according to how fast you go into the bumper. And those kind of like small touches, I think, does a lot for the game.
Wow, it's subtle too, because I mean, it's something I realize it now that oh God, yes, it's doing that, but it doesn't overwhelm you with it. It was very nicely handled.
Yeah, I think so too.
So what are you the most proud of? I mean, when you watch people play it or when you guys play it, what part do you look at or just, you know, what elements do you look at and just say, oh, that is exactly what we envisioned?
I think we're kind of overwhelmed, I think, by the reception overall, because as we knew there were certain flaws in the game, which we didn't really have time to fix. So when people started playing it and the reviews started dropping in, we were kind of surprised with how well received it was. And in one way, when we like did Raggle Kung Fu for Torture, that was a small team, but when you do the game with just two people, it gets very personal in some weird way. It's kind of like, feel like if you get criticism, it feels very personal, and it's very hard to detach yourself from the game.
Right.
Game in that sense, but I think what we really aimed at, and we have gotten a lot of good feedback on, and which I'm proud of, is probably the gameplay. Overall, the game is so heavily focused on the gameplay, and I think the core gameplay has been so well received. I know for a fact that Felix is very happy with how well received the level design has been overall. Mm-hmm. That has been an area which he has spent a lot of work in, and which he wanted to do a good job at. So probably level design and overall the reception of core gameplay, but that has been so great.
So tell me a little bit about that. Like you said, you always notice your flaws more than anyone else does because you're so close to the game. So tell me about the nervousness. I mean, when you're ready to release, and I mean, do you ever, even now, I mean, do you ever feel 100% confident in a product that when you release it, or are you guys still your own worst critics when you see it? I mean, you see little things that gamers probably aren't even going to notice.
Yeah, really. that's very true. I would like, in that area, I'd like to take an example actually from Raggle Kung Fu again, where there's like, if you played Super Smash Bros., it's kind of a fighting game. So there's a thing where you can jump through platforms. It's kind of a common thing, I think, where you can jump through platforms.
Right.
And games overall, they don't react to the fact that you are jumping, clipping right through the floor or whatever. But when we as developers work on the game, it was a huge problem. We spend a lot of resources to solve that specific problem where we can't have the character clipping through the floor or something when he's jumping through it. But in the end, people aren't paying attention to those small things. And I think that is a lesson to be learned, to don't spend too much time on small things which people don't notice. Could you say the original question again? Kind of lost track.
Oh, I was just saying, and just tell me about that feeling of nervousness when you're ready to release. Or how do you know that you're ready to release since you're independent and you're working on your own schedule? I mean, you're so nervous. How do you finally tell yourself, okay, enough, we've done the best we can do, let's just release it? I mean, or does that feeling of nervousness ever go away, or do you...
Nah, it didn't for us at least, but in our case it was kind of easy because, Felix, my partner, he didn't have any money left to pay the rent for the next month, so we kind of had to release it. And the game was in a stage where we thought, yeah, it's kind of complete. There's some areas which we would like to fix, but it's not too bad now. We didn't know any crash bugs or any, there were no bugs left which we knew of, so we thought it was a good time to release based on that. But otherwise, I think it's always easy to find small parts which you could improve on. And I think that polish which adds to the game when you improve on those small parts, it really adds up in some way. And that's probably why, for example, Blizzard is known for their games. They like bought forever. But it's really hard to kind of feel like, okay, this is enough, let's release.
So... You released on Steam. You've had a good deal of success so far. So tell me about making the transition back to your roots and going back to PSN.
Yeah, basically, for the PC version, we got a lot of the feedback was that they really want it on a console. And I think from our perspective, we kind of felt like, okay, yeah, PlayStation would be a great platform for us for a number of reasons, because first of all, Radical Kung Fu was made for PlayStation Network, so we kind of like had some previous experience with the platform.
Exactly.
And then and we didn't really make a lot of money on the PC version of Nimbus, so we kind of like, yeah, PlayStation Network made sense, and especially since Sony accepted us and gave us the opportunity to actually work for the PlayStation Network. Mm-hmm. So from that point of view, it kind of felt like the best option we had. And now, since we have the PC version, we have gotten a lot of feedback on it, we really have now the opportunity to go back and fix the things which people didn't quite like. So, yeah, if I'm going to touch on a little bit on about the features which we are trying to make better for the PlayStation Network version, first of all, it's like we talked about earlier, the progression throughout the game. Trying to make that a bit more balanced so that World 3, as I said, isn't as hard as it is now. And really getting a lot of alternative routes going. Overall, I think, and I feel personally as well, that the whole alternate route part is really funny. The whole exploration and finding the exits. And not always being forced to go one straight line to the end. Of course, the boss, the Goliath, the evil eye, we really want to do a bit more with trying to get that whole, not more story into the game, but people don't really identify with the craft. Because it's like, yeah, a piece of metal playing around. So you're trying to kind of and reworking the art and probably trying to get the new main character going. And we want to get more boss battles into the game, but that is something which takes a lot of time. But overall, we feel like we have a lot of areas to focus on for the PlayStation Network release. We will see what will be in the finished product, but I'm hoping that we get better progression and more boss battles, and multiplayer is something which is high on the priority list for sure.
Great. So when might people expect that on PlayStation Network?
Yeah, well, at the earliest, I'd say quarter four, so the end of this year, I'd say, at the earliest. But I wouldn't be surprised if we aren't ready until the beginning of next year.
Well, that's okay because it gives people something to look forward to, definitely. So,
Yeah.
what's next for Numenon Games after Nimbus? Or do you have an inkling of your next project, or are you still so entwined with Nimbus that you just haven't even given that any thought yet?
We have a lot of thoughts for new projects. We have probably around 10 projects, I'd say, which are kind of like just in the idea phase. But there is one project in particular which we are probably going to do next, which is it's kind of like personally, I'm very much into games with a lot of character development and interesting systems with upgrades and that sort of stuff.
Okay.
So the next game will be kind of a top-down shooter affair with a lot of upgrades, and we're going to try to reuse a lot of the parts we built for Nimbus. So the next game we probably have a world map and that whole open feel to it, and we want high scores as well in some sort. So yeah, kind of a different game than Nimbus, but there are a lot of other games which are kind of like, as I said, in the idea phase. So you never know for certain which game we will go with.
Ooh, I can't wait to try that. I know it's a long way off, but it's something definitely based on my experience with Nimbus. I can't wait to see your future projects. What do you want gamers to experience when they see Numenon Games on the splash page or on the title screen or whatever? What do you want that to mean to players?
Yeah, I think kind of like our thing is that I think the mainstream industry, as of now, everybody's going down pretty much the same path, I'd say, where it's very important to make the game appeal to the casual audience. Like, we are talking nowadays about the guided experience, where kind of like the game almost plays itself, and where there's a lot of focus on story, art, and technology. But I think we want to stand more for our games, which are very heavy focused on gameplay, and which kind of, in some ways, brings the thought back to games of old, in some ways, where, yeah, it was a lot of focus on the gameplay instead of the other stuff. And then, of course, we would probably always focus on some unique aspects, trying to have some unique feel to our games.
Very nice. I said you definitely get that from playing Nimbus. I mean, I see definitely where that vision statement is coming from. So the question I ask every developer I talk to: what games influence Nimbus? What games are you playing right now?
Yeah.
When you're not working on the game itself.
Okay, personally, I'm playing a game called Demon's Souls. I don't know if you've played it.
I'm familiar with it. I
Yeah,
haven't played it yet.
it's a really hardcore third-person kind of like RPG game.
Okay.
So that, I think it's great. But and Felix is playing Assassin's Creed now, and
Okay.
Heroes of New World. And I personally play a lot of StarCraft 2 as well. But it's kind of like, yeah, kind of mainstream games. Yeah, what was the other part of the question?
What games influenced
Yeah,
Nimbus?
I would have to ask Felix that probably, but yeah, I don't know if I know what kind of games you should play, so I think it was kind of a fluke. The whole world map part, which is influenced by Super Mario Brothers 3,
Right.
and I think there's, even if we are certainly not high on the Nintendo stuff per se, I'd say there's probably a lot of influence from old Nintendo games,
Okay.
in one sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely got that impression. Well, Sebastian, I want to thank you for your time today. And why don't you tell the people again where they can find the game and just kind of give a quick little pitch for it.
Yeah, so Nimbus can be found on. We are only selling it over Steam. So, yeah, if you want a platform/racing puzzle game, kind of unique game of all. Then check out Nimbus on Steam. Yeah, search Steam and you'll find it.
Sounds good. Well, again, Sebastian Carlson, Numenon Games, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.